Welcome to the only podcast to specifically focus on real estate investing in and around the great city we call Chicago. With a focus on neighborhoods, strategies, success stories, obstacles, resources needed, and everything you need to know from everyone that has done it before you. We break down what has worked and, more importantly, what has not. We want you to learn best practices and pitfalls to avoid in your real estate investments here in Chicago so you can become a straight up Chicago investor. Here are your property manager and investor hosts, Mark Ainley and Tom Shellcross.
Welcome to another Straight Up Tuesday tip. I'm Tom Shellcross. With me as always is Mark Ainley. And with us for the third time, we have Noah Burke. Noah, welcome back.
It is good to be back. And awesome intro, Tom. You are really bringing it with those lately.
See, I know you listen. We appreciate it. So we had you and Aaron on episode 141 a while back. And you were also one of the OGs. You were episode 23. So
OG,
that was a big pull for us, getting Noah Burke back in the day.
Man, I've been a fan since day one, so it's an honor. Third time on, I'm trying to set a record here. I've heard some guys on five times, maybe six. One of these days, I'm going to get up there.
All right, well, we're going to have you and Aaron back on to talk about the South Side. But today, you know, you brought up an interesting term, asymmetric risk. And it's going to be about negotiating and focusing on the parts of the deals that, you know, actually bring a high reward to you instead of, you know, the low risk, high reward, as opposed to the pitfalls. So I tried to tee it up there. I don't know if I articulated it very well. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let's talk about asymmetric risk during the negotiation process.
Yeah, no, it teed up very well. Asymmetric risk, to me, it's something that I think about in all aspects of life, in business, in real estate, for myself, marketing myself, and brokerage. But today, I'm going to focus on what it looks like inside of a deal. So like you said, it's putting yourself in a low risk, high reward position. And when you're in a deal, there's so many different things that get negotiated. There's price, there's terms like earnest money, mortgage contingency, attorney review timelines, due diligence timelines, tax prorations. There's a bunch of different levers that you have as a buyer or a seller when you're putting a deal together. And so usually what happens, we usually close an apartment building a week. So we see this all day, every day, people that are posturing in different positions and trying to figure out the best way to move forward within a deal. And in my experience, at the beginning of a deal, everybody starts from a very logical place. They say, this deal is worth this amount to me. I'm willing to do this amount of earnest money. And it's a logical thought process. Then what tends to happen is people get some level of deal fatigue as early as 1 week in, 2 weeks in. And then especially once you start to get to a month or 3 months in, people start to form different opinions, and then ego and emotion comes into the deal and people start forgetting about the important parts of the deal. And to me, I kind of group parts of a deal into like tier one, tier two, tier three. And tier one is price. It's price and it's just actually closing the deal. It's a successful transaction. And that's the paramount thing to me. That's what everybody should be focused on. And it gets lost when people are trying to win these little battles like earnest money or, hey, I need a 3-day extension. And a seller will turn around and say, I'm not going to give you a 3-day extension unless you give me $100,000 more today. And when you do that, you're putting yourself in a high risk, high reward position because the buyer might say, okay, I don't need the 3 days. I just don't need this deal anymore. So it's that general idea of putting yourself in a position where the things that you can lose are very minimal, but you're still always on deck to be able to get the thing that you want, which is probably either buying the building or selling the building.
Yeah, well said. So what you mentioned one there, can you give us some of the other traps? And you've seen this. This is from some of the most experienced players in the game, right? We see this on the residential side all the time, right? Like people just get insanely emotional towards the finish
line. Yes.
But it's crazy. Yeah. Even in the commercial world, people have been doing this for 20, 30 years, like can still get caught up in some of these things.
It is crazy. There are guys that I know that have been in the business for 30. There are times when I'm buying a building for my own personal portfolio and I know this stuff and I talk about this stuff and I'll be in a position where I get so frustrated that I know that I'm not going about it the right way. And I will, especially when you're a seller. So like what I often see is that if somebody is selling a building, they expect the person that's buying the building to be the same profile that they were when they were buying it. And maybe they bought a building in 2012 And for them, they're like, oh, no, I don't care. Like, here, cash deal, no problem. I'll move forward. And they're selling, they're not selling to that profile of a person. And so I tried to explain to them that, like, you need, like, this person is trying to give you millions of dollars. Don't make it hard for them to do that. If they want to see a couple extra water bills, give them a couple extra water bills. But unfortunately, when you're, you know, after a buyer's asked for two extensions and then they say, hey, I'd like to see your, you know, three months of water bills from 2018. You say, no, just buy the building, just buy the building. You're putting your entire $1 million deal in jeopardy because you don't want to go search up your water bills. So it's one of those things where it's like, you got to weigh that risk and decide, like, do I want to, you know, get on the internet, find my bills to give to this person so that they have a chance of giving me millions of dollars. And am I willing to put my ego aside to do that? And like that, that's a good example of one that we see often where it's like just asking a seller to do something that they don't want to do. And a seller thinking about their emotions instead of saying, how can I help myself get, you know, get this transaction done?
The funny thing is I've been stuck in that situation as a seller where I get mad and I have to question, like, am I mad at the buyer for wanting this? Or am I mad at myself because I'm so disorganized, I have to go kind of defining that. Like that ends up being a real issue with people just keeping organized. Cause if you have those water bills in a file or you have your login under the password saved to somewhere safe, like you can pull that stuff up literally on your phone, screenshot and send it over within seconds. Like, so that's the question I put myself into a lot.
Yeah. It gets people out of their comfort zones a little bit because you're not selling a building every day and you're not buying a building every day. And so like you are probably asking for things that you're not used to asking for. And as a seller, you might be giving things away that you're not used to giving away or that aren't meaningful to you. And so you may not understand why somebody's so concerned with your water bill from 3 years ago, but for whatever reason, they have a thought in their head that maybe there's, you know, a plumbing issue somewhere down the line that there's galvanized, you know, whatever it might be, they have a reason usually for asking it. And as a seller, it's one of those things where you have to assess, okay, is it worth 3 minutes of time to potentially get this $1 million transaction done? And like, that's the equation I'm talking about. Putting yourself in an asymmetric position where you put 3 minutes in, you might get millions of dollars. Or you say, no, I'm not going to put 3 minutes in. And in turn, the buyer says, all right, then I'm not going to give you millions of dollars.
Man, you put it in such an easy way of looking at it. Like, you make it easy, ease of doing business. That's one thing we do here at GC Realty. That's our goal. And so many businesses or sellers, they make it so difficult to let you give them your money. Like, the whole goal and what you're saying is being able to get to the finish line. The one thing is just selling, and all everything else is just a byproduct or steps to get to the one goal that everybody working on that deal has that same goal, and just people lose sight of that.
Absolutely. And it goes the same way for buyers too. And again, like taking my broker hat off and putting myself in the buyer seat. There's been deals where, you know, one I was doing recently, I think like we had offered $4 million for the deal and the seller came back and said, we want $4,100,000. That's our bottom line. And we were kind of like, our bottom line was 4 million. And then it's like, all right, that's where you like, that's the moment there where you take a step back and you're like, what is our plan here? Does this deal still make sense at $100,000 more? Will I be more upset if I lose this deal that I've decided is worth $4 million to me for $100,000? Like, is that $100,000 really worth me losing this deal that I've invested time, money, and, you know, those sorts of things into? And so it's the same idea from buyers or sellers. It's just that like when you look at them, when you break the deal down into small sections, it becomes a little bit more clear, but it gets lost very easily when you put emotion into it. You decide that there's certain things that like you won't move on, you know, for an unnecessary reason or for a reason you haven't quite thought through.
Yep. Playing on the other side of the field though, like what is a necessary reason, right? Because this, if you totally adapt this mindset, it can go too far the other way, right? Where now you're getting pushed over and now, you know, right? Like, so how do you draw that line? Like, what is that thought process?
That's the gray area question that's really hard to figure out because you should have a line where it's like, okay, $4 million is my line. But then you have to ask yourself like, all right, how did I get to that line? And it never really is like that line because you certainly would do it for $4 million and $100. Like you wouldn't pass it up for $100. It's not worth it. And so like there is some sort of gray area there where I guess you have to look at each deal with a little bit of nuance and actually ask yourself, like, will I be more upset if I lose this over $100,000, or will I be happy that I put the $100,000 in, you know, 10 years later? And so like that is the question that you should constantly be asking yourself within a deal. And this comes up anytime there's an ask in a deal. Like anytime somebody asks anything of you as a seller or you as a buyer, it's a time to take a step back and say, okay, is this a position where it's a low risk, high reward position, or am I putting something in jeopardy that I don't necessarily want to put in jeopardy?
Yep. One thing I'll add to this too is, you know, just velocity of the deal. Like time kills all deals. So if you're on the buy side, if you get that earnest money there the next day, then you turn around and ask me for like, hey, I need to see all the permits. I need to see all this. Like, I'm probably going to turn around and do it the next day as well. Like, you almost set the tone for how this deal is going to go. Where if you drag your feet for 4 or 5 days, like, I have little incentive to do the same when you start asking me for stuff.
Yeah. And also like playing to this idea, doing just that is a good negotiation tactic where like, if you are a buyer that you know you're probably going to be asking for a credit later, then you probably want to set the stage going in that everything is going as smooth as possible. We get the deal under contract, boom, my earnest money's there 10 minutes later. I ask for my due diligence stuff, like everything is very planned out, and that's putting yourself in a good position with the seller. So you're almost preemptively setting yourself up to be able to make a bigger ask later in the deal. And it doesn't always work, but you certainly put yourself in a much better position than when the seller is already frustrated with you because you've been dragging your feet, you haven't been communicating properly. Then they are much, much less likely to give you something later. And it's also one of those things where like, if you lowball somebody going in, then they're probably less likely to, you know, help you out throughout the deal. So it's a low risk, high reward, you know, or a high risk, high reward situation. If somebody's asking for $1 million and you say, all right, I'll give you $600,000 when you know that you'll pay $800,000. It's just, you know, you might get it, but you might have a better odds of getting it at 750 if you came in at 725 or that sort of equation.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, Mark, anything else to add?
No, that's good. It's all great stuff.
All right. I think, you know, emotion is so crazy during the roller coaster of the deals. And it's so funny to talk about it now because we all get caught up in it. Right.
Well, like, I will add one more thing. One thing that I was taught from early on getting my license, and me as a manager broker of whatever, I got 25 or 30 people, like the one goal of a broker is to keep the emotion. Like, that's when you want to get the deal closed. You got to make money. But your purpose, if we want to protect why we exist in transactions, is to keep the emotion outside of the deal. Because buyers and sellers, it's hard. Brokers, as buyers or sellers, bring the emotion in just as much as anyone else, like you're explaining, Noah. So that's our goal, is to keep the emotion out.
Amen.
All right. Good stuff. Mark, Chicago Fact to end this. Who are we playing for?
All right, we're playing for Grant Condors. And of course, we're sponsored today by Kaiser Group. So Grant, if myself or Noah get this right, you get a $50 gift card brought to you by Kaiser Group.
All right. So we're recording this mid-September. I saw you guys just close the deal in South Shore. So I got a South Shore question for you. So I got four names here. All of them have some affiliation with South Shore. They either live there or were born there, except for, so three of them are, who's the oddball that's not? And your options are Kanye West, Gale Sayers, Bo Diddley, Louis Armstrong. Which one of them has no affiliation to South Shore?
Well, it's not Kanye West. I tried buying his house on South Shore Drive.
I was going to say
South Shore Drive.
Yeah, Kanye's the only one I know for sure. Mark, what do you got?
Louis Armstrong, Bo, and Sayers. My guess would be, I'm going to go with Sayers, so you could pick somebody different then.
I was going to go with Sayers as well. I feel like I would know if he was from Chicago, but I'll go with Louis Armstrong, the...
No,
give us a lower risk, higher reward position.
There we go. And it pays off. Louis Armstrong's the answer. Sayers lived there during his time playing with the Bears.
Ah, there we go.
I mean, I thought for sure Louis Armstrong was over there. Yeah, that's awesome.
That was my trap game for you.
I like it. It's funny. We all knew, though, Kanye West. So, all right, Grant, you get a $50 gift card, you know, thanks to Noah. So, Grant, thank you it looks like you bought something at the Straight Up merch store. So, thank you. Man, Noah, this is great coming on. It only makes me remember that we have to do more shows together and get you on. You guys did so many deals just on a yearly basis. You guys got so much. So I'm
it's
looking
September,
forward to having you.
You guys got 50 apartment buildings sold. It's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're at 60 now. We're rolling. We're rolling.
Yeah, Tav, you and your team on here. We got to do that soon here before the end of the year. So listeners, right, look forward to that. So thank you guys. You know, all you listeners, check out Meet Your Team, where you can find awesome people for your network like Noah, other lenders, inspectors, and everyone you need for your real estate journey here in Chicago. And it's all been people that we've worked with or we highly recommend anyway. So check that out, straightofchicagoinvestor.com. Noah, thank you. Tom, thank you as always. Listeners, we'll see you Thursday.
Thanks all.